Yes, somewhat. That is Agent Neptune. How much he give, I am not sure, but I know KGB read much of American naval communications.
What about other communications? Jack asked immediately.
Naval communications, that I am sure. Others I am not sure. But you use same cipher machines for all, yes?
Actually not, Alan told him.
So, you say British communications are secure?
If broken, I do not know it, Zaitsev replied. Most American diplomatic and intelligence information we get come from Agent Cassius. He is aide to senior politician in Washington. He give us good information on what CIA do and what CIA learn from us.
But you said he's not part of CIA, Ryan asked.
No. I think he is politician aide, helper, member of staff.
Like that, Zaitsev said, rather positively.
Good.
Ryan lit up a smoke and offered one to Zaitsev, who took it at once.
I run out of my Krasnoprezhensky, he explained.
I should give you all of mine. My wife wants me to quit. She's a doctor, Jack explained.
Bah, the rabbit responded.
So why did you decide to leave? Kingshot asked, taking a sip of tea.
The reply nearly made him drop the cup.
KGB wanted to kill Pope.
You're serious?
It was the more experienced man who asked that question, not Ryan.
Serious? I risk my life. My wife, life, my daughter, life. Da, I am serious, Oleg Ivanovich assured his interlocutors with an edge on his voice.
Fuck, Ryan breathed.
Oleg, we need to know about this.
It start in August. 15 August it start, Zaitsev told them, spinning out his tale without interruption for 5 or 6 minutes.
No name for the operation? Jack asked when he stopped.
No name. Just dispatch number 15882666. That is date of first message from Andropov to Resident Yura Rome, and number of message, yes? Yuri Vladimirovich ask, how get close to Pope? Rome say bad idea. Then Colonel Rozhdestvensky, he is main assistant to chairman, yes? He send signal to Resident Yura Sofia. Operation go from Sofia. So, Operation 666 probably run for KGB by Dirzhavna Sugronost. I think officer name is Strokov, Boris Andreevich.
Kingshot had a thought and rose, leaving the room. He came back with Nick Thompson, a former detective superintendent of the Metropolitan Police.
Nick, does the name Boris Andreevich Strokov mean anything to you?
The former cop blinked hard.
Indeed it does, Alan. He's the chappie we think killed Georgi Markov on Westminster Bridge. We had him under surveillance, but he flew out of the country before we had enough cause to pick him up at questioning.
Wasn't he under diplomatic cover? Ryan asked, and was surprised by Thompson's answer.
Actually not. He came in undocumented and left the same way. I saw him myself at Heathrow, but we didn't put the pieces together quickly enough.
Dreadful case it was.
The poison they gave Markov was horrific stuff.
You eyeballed the Strokov guy?
Thompson nodded.
Oh, yes.
He might have noticed me. I wasn't being all that careful under the circumstances.
He's the one who killed Markov. I'd stake my life on it.
How can you be sure?
I chased murderers for near on 20 years, Sir John. You get to know them in all that time.
And that's what he was. A murderer, Thompson said with total confidence.
Ryan could remember his father being like this, even on frustrating cases when he knew what he needed but couldn't quite prove it to a jury.
The Bulgarians have a sort of contract with the Soviets, Kingshot explained. Back in 1964 or so, they agreed to handle all the necessary eliminations for the KGB. In return, they get various perks, mostly political.
Strokov, yes, I've heard that name before.
Did you get a photo of the chap, Nick?
50 or more, Alan Thompson assured him. I'll never forget that face. He has the eyes of a corpse. No life in them at all. Like a doll's eyes.
How good is he? Ryan asked.
As an assassin?
Quite good, Sir John.
Very good indeed. His elimination of Markov on the bridge was expertly done. It was the third attempt. The first two would-be assassins bungled the job, and they called Strokov in to get it right. And that he did. Had things gone just a little differently, we would not have realized it was a murder at all.
We think he's worked elsewhere in the West, Kingshot said. But very little good information.
And just gossip, really. Jack, this is a dangerous development. I need to get this information to Basil, soonest.
And with that, Alan left the room to get to a secure phone. Ryan turned back to Zaitsev.
And that's why you decided to leave?
KGB won't kill innocent man, Ryan.
I see plot grow.
And the Ropov himself say, do this.
I handle the messages.
How can man stop KGB, he asked.
I cannot stop KGB, but I will not help KGB kill priest.
He is an innocent man, yes?
Ryan's eyes looked down at the floor.
Yes, Oleg Ivanovich, he is.
Dear God in heaven.
He checked his watch. He had to get this information out PDQ, but nobody was awake at Langley yet.
Bloody hell, Sir Basil Charleston said into his secure phone. Is this reliable information, Alan?
Yes, sir, I believe it to be entirely truthful.
Our rabbit seems a decent chap and a rather clever one. He seems to be motivated exclusively by his conscience.
Next, Kingshot told him about the first revelation of the morning. Minister.
We need to get 5 looking into that.
The British Security Service, once known as MI5, was the counter-espionage arm of their government. They'd need a little more specific information to run that putative traitor down, but they already had a starting point.
20 years, was it?
What a productive traitor that fellow had to be, Sir Basil thought. Time for him to see Parkhurst Prison on the Isle of Wight.
Charleston had spent years cleaning up his own shop, once a playground for the KGB.
But no more, and never bloody again, the knight commander of the Bath swore to himself.
Ryan wondered. Basil would doubtless call Langley. Jack would make sure of that, but Sir Basil was a supremely reliable guy. Next came a more difficult question. What the hell can we do about this? Ryan lit another smoke to consider that one. It was more police work than intelligence work. And the central issue would be classification.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem. If we tell anybody, the word will get out somehow, and then somebody will know we have the rabbit. And guess what, Jack? The rabbit is now more important to the CIA than the life of the Pope.
Oh, shit, Ryan thought. It was like a trick of jiu-jitsu, like a sudden reversal of polarity on the dial of a compass. North was now south. Inside was now outside. And the needs of American intelligence might now supersede the life of the Bishop of Rome. His face must have betrayed what he was thinking.
What is amiss, Ryan? The rabbit asked.
It seemed to Jack a strange word for him to know.
The information you just gave us.
We've been worrying about the safety of the Pope for a couple of months, but we had no specific information to make us believe his life was actually at risk. Now you have given that information to us, and someone must decide what to do with it. Do you know anything at all about the operation?
No, almost nothing. In Sofia, the action officer is the resident, Colonel Bobovoy, Ilya Fedorovich. Senior colonel, he is. Ambassador, can I say? To Bulgarian DS. This Colonel Strokov, this name I know from old cases. He is officer assassin for DS. He do other things too, yes, but when men need bullet, Strokov deliver bullet, yes?
This struck Ryan as something from a bad movie, except that in the movies, the big bad CIA was the one with a special assassination department, like a cupboard with vampire bats inside. When the director needed somebody killed, he'd open the door, and one of the bats flew out and made its kill, then flew back docilely to the cupboard and hung upside down until the next man needed killing. Sure, Wilbur. Hollywood had everything figured out except that government bureaucracies all ran on paper. Nothing happened without a written order of some sort, because only a piece of white paper with black ink on it would cover somebody's ass when things went bad. And if somebody really needed killing, someone inside the system had to sign the order. And who would sign that kind of order? That sort of thing became a permanent record of something bad, and so the signature blank would be bucked all the way to the Oval Office. And once there, it just wasn't the sort of paper that would find its way into the presidential library that memorialized the person known inside the security community as National Command Authority. And nobody in between would sign the order, because government employees never stuck their necks out. That wasn't the way they were trained. Except me, Ryan thought. But he wouldn't kill someone in cold blood. He hadn't even killed Sean Miller in very hot blood, and while that was a strange thing to be proud of, it beat the hell out of the alternative. But Jack wasn't afraid of sticking it out. The loss of his government paycheck would be a net profit for John Patrick Ryan. He could go back to teaching, perhaps at a nice private university that paid halfway decently, and he'd be able to dabble with the stock market on the side, something with which his current job interfered rather badly. What the hell am I going to do? The worst part of all was that Ryan considered himself to be a Catholic. Maybe he didn't make it to Mass every week. Maybe they'd never name a church after him, but God damn it, the Pope was someone he was compelled by his lengthy education. Catholic schools all the way, including almost 12 years of Jesuits, to respect. And added to that was something equally important. The education he'd received at the gentle hands of the United States Marine Corps at Quantico's basic school. They'd taught him that when you saw something that needed doing, you damn well did it. And you hoped that your senior officers would bless it afterward, because decisive action had saved the day more than once in the history of the Corps. It's a lot easier to get forgiveness than permission, was what the major who'd taught that particular class had said. Then added with a smile, but don't you people ever quote me on that. You just had to apply judgment to your action, and such judgment came with experience. But experience often came from bad decisions. You're over 30 now, Jack, and you've had experience that you never wanted to get. But be damned if you haven't learned a hell of a lot from it. He would have been at least a captain by now, Jack thought. Maybe even a junior major, like Billy Tucker, who'd taught that class. Just then, Kingshot walked back into the room.
"Al, we have a problem," Ryan told him.
"I know, Jack. I just told Sir Basil. He's thinking about it." "You're a field spook. What do you think?"
"Jack, this is well over my level of expertise and command."
"You turn your brain off, Al?" Ryan asked sharply.
"Jack, we cannot compromise our source, can we?" Kingshot shot back. "That is the paramount consideration here and now."
Al, we know that somebody is going to try to whack the head of my church. We know his name, and Nick has a photo album on the fucker, remember?
Ryan took a deep breath before going on.
I am not going to sit here and do nothing about it, Ryan concluded, entirely forgetting the presence of the rabbit for the moment.
You do nothing? I risk my life for this, and you do nothing? Zaitsev demanded, catching on to the rapid-fire English exchanged in front of him. His face showed both outrage and puzzlement.
Al Kingshot handled the answer.
That is not for us to say. We cannot compromise our source. You, Oleg, we must protect you as well.
Fuck!
Ryan stood and walked out of the room.
But what the hell could he actually do? Jack asked himself.
Then he went looking for the secure phone and dialed a number from memory.
Murray, a voice said after the STUs married up.
Dan, it's Jack.
Where you been? I called 2 nights ago and Kathy said you were in Germany on NATO business. I wanted to...
Ryan just cut him off.
Stick it, Dan. I was somewhere else doing something else. Listen up. I need some information and I need it in a hurry, Jack announced, lapsing briefly back into the voice of an officer of Marines.
Shoot, Murray replied.
I need to know the Pope's schedule for the next week or so.
It was Friday.
Ryan hoped the Bishop of Rome didn't have anything hopping for the weekend.
What? The FBI official's voice communicated predictable puzzlement.
You heard me.
What the hell for?
Can't tell you...
Oh, shit, Ryan swore and then went on. Dan, we have reason to believe there's a contract out on the Pope.
Who? Murray asked.
It ain't the Knights of Columbus, was all Ryan felt comfortable saying.
Shit, Jack. Are you serious?
What the hell do you think? Ryan demanded.
Okay. Let me make some phone calls.
What exactly am I free to say?
That question stopped Ryan cold in his tracks. Think, boy, think.
Okay. You're a private citizen, and a friend of yours is going to Rome, and he wants to eyeball His Holiness. You want to know what's the best way to accomplish that mission. Fair enough?
What's Langley say about this?
Dan, frankly, I don't care a rat's ass right now, okay? Please, get me that information. I'll call back in an hour, okay?
Roger that, Jack. 1 hour.
Murray hung up. Ryan knew he could trust Murray. He was himself a Jesuit product, like so many FBI agents. In his case, a Boston College alum, just like Ryan. And so whatever additional loyalties he had would work in Ryan's favor. Breathing a little easier, Ryan returned to the Ducal Library.
Whom did you call, Jack? Kingshot asked.
Dan Murray at the embassy, the FBI rep. You ought to know him.
The legal attaché, yes, I do.
Okay, what did you ask?
The Pope's schedule for the coming week.
But we don't know anything yet, Kingshot objected.
Does that make you feel any better, Al? Jack inquired delicately.
You did not compromise our source? You think I'm that stupid?
The Brit spook nodded to the logic of the moment.
Very well. No harm done, I expect.
The next hour of the first interview returned to routine things. Zaitsev fleshed out for the Brits what he knew about Minister. It was sufficiently juicy to give them a good start on IDing the guy. It was immediately clear that Kingshot wanted his hide on the barn door. There was no telling how much good information KGB was getting from him. It was definitely a him, Zaitsev made clear, and him was probably a senior civil servant in Whitehall, and soon his residence would be provided by Her Majesty's government for the indefinite future. At the Queen's pleasure, was the official phrase. But Jack had more pressing concerns. At 2:20 in the afternoon, he went back to the STU in the next room.
Dan, it's Jack.
The legal attaché spoke without preamble.
He has a busy week ahead, the embassy in Rome tells me, but the Pope is always in the open on Wednesday afternoons.
He parades around in his white jeep in St. Peter's Square, right in front of the cathedral, for the people to see him and take his blessing. It's an open car, and if you want to pop a cap, that sounds to me like a good time to try. Unless they have a shooter infiltrated all the way inside. Maybe a cleaning man, plumber, electrician, hard to say. But you have to assume that the inside staff is pretty loyal, and that people keep an eye on them. Sure, Jack thought, but those are the guys best suited to do something like this. Only the people you trust can really duck you. Damn. The best people to look into this were with the Secret Service, but he didn't know anybody in there, and even if he did, getting them into the Vatican bureaucracy, the world's oldest, would require divine intervention. Thanks, pal, I owe you one. Semper Fi, bud. Will you be able to tell me more? This sounds like a major case you're working on. Probably not, but it's not for me to say, Dan. Gotta run. Later, man. Ryan hung up and re-entered the library. The sun was over the yardarm, and a wine bottle had just appeared. A French white from the Loire Valley, probably a nice old one. There was dust on the bottle. It had been there for a while, and the cellar downstairs would not be stocked with Thunderbird and Wild Irish Rose. Zaitsev here has all manner of good information on this minister chap. Just a matter of dredging it up, Kingshot didn't add. But tomorrow they'd have skilled psychologists sitting in, using their shrink skills to massage his memories. Maybe even hypnosis. Ryan didn't know if that actually worked or not. Though some police forces believed in the technique, a lot of defense lawyers foamed at the mouth over it, and Jack didn't know who was right on that issue. On the whole, it was a shame that the rabbit wasn't able to come out with photos taken of KGB files. But it would have been asking a lot to request that the guy place his neck not so much on the block as inside the guillotine head holder and shout for the operator to come over. And so far, Zaitsev had impressed Ryan with his memory. Might he be a plant? A false defector sent west to give the agency and others false information? It was possible, but the proof of that pudding would lie in the quality of the agents he identified to the Western Counterintelligence Services. If Minister was really giving out good information, the quality of it would tell the security service if he were that valuable an agent. The Russians were never the least bit loyal to their agents. They'd never, not once, tried to bargain for an American or British traitor rotting away in prison, as America had often done, sometimes successfully. No, the Russians considered them expendable assets, and such assets were expended, with little more than a covert decoration that would never be worn by its honored recipient. It struck Ryan as very strange. The KGB was the most professional of services in so many ways. Didn't they know that showing loyalty to an agent would help make other agents willing to take greater chances? Perhaps it was a case of national philosophy overruling common sense. A lot of that went on in the USSR. By 4 o'clock local time, Jack could be sure that somebody would be at work at Langley. He asked one more question of the rabbit. Oleg Ivanich, do you know if KGB can crack our secure phone systems? I think not. I am not sure, but I know that we have an agent in Washington, codename Cricket, whom we have asked to get information on your STU telephones for us. As yet, he has not been able to provide what our communications people wish. We are afraid that you can read our telephone traffic, however, and so we mainly avoid using telephones for important traffic. Thanks. And Ryan went back to the STU in the next room. The next number was another he had memorized. This is James Greer. Admiral, this is Jack. I am told the rabbit is in his new hutch, the DDI said by way of a greeting. That is correct, sir, and the good news is that he believes our comms are secure, including this one. The earlier fears appear to have been exaggerated or misinterpreted.
Is there bad news? The DDI asked warily.
Yes, sir. Yuri Andropov wants to kill the Pope.
How reliable is that assertion? James Greer asked at once.
Sir, that's the reason he skipped.
I'll have chapter and verse to you in a day or two at most, but it's official. There is a no-shit KGB operation to assassinate the Bishop of Rome. We even have the operation designator. You will want to let the judge in on that, and probably NCA will want to know as well.
I see, Vice Admiral Greer said from 3,400 miles away. That's going to be a problem.
Damn straight it is.
Ryan took a breath.
What can we do about it?
That's the problem, my boy, the DDI said next. First, can we do anything about it? Second, do we want to do anything about it?
Admiral, why would we not want to do something about it? Ryan asked, trying to keep his voice short of insubordinate. He respected Greer as a boss and as a man.
Back up, son. Think it all the way through. First, our mission in life is to protect the United States of America and no one else.
Well, allies, too, of course, Greer added for the tape recorders that had to be on this line.
But our primary duty is to our flag, not to any religious figure. We will try to help him if we can, but if we cannot, then we cannot.
Very well, Ryan responded through gritted teeth. What about right and wrong, he wanted to ask, but that would have to wait a few moments.
We do not ordinarily give away classified information, and you can imagine how tightly held this defection is going to be, Greer went on.
Yes, sir. But at least it wasn't going to be no foreign, not for distribution to foreigners.
The Brits were foreigners, and they already knew all about Beatrix and the rabbit. But the Brits weren't big on sharing, except sometimes with America, and usually with a big quid pro quo tacked onto it. It was just how things worked. Similarly, Ryan wasn't allowed to discuss a single thing about some operations he was cleared into. Talent Keyhole was the code name. The reconnaissance satellites, though the CIA and the Pentagon had fallen all over themselves giving the raw data to the British during the Falklands War, plus every intercept the National Security Agency had from South America. Blood was still thicker than water.
Admiral, how will it look in the papers if it becomes known that the Central Intelligence Agency had data on the threat to the Pope and we just sat on our hands?
Is that a
threat?
No, sir, not from me. I play by the rules, sir, and you know it. But somebody there will leak the information just because he's pissed about it, and you know that. And when that happens, there'll be hell to pay.
Point taken, Greer agreed.
Are you proposing anything?
That's above my pay grade, sir, but we have to think hard about possible action of some sort.
What else are we getting from our new friend?
We have the code names of three major leaks. One is Minister, sounds like a political and foreign policy leak in Whitehall. Two for our side of the ocean. Neptune sounds naval, and that's the source of our communications insecurity. Somebody in Redland is reading the Navy's mail, sir. And there's one in D.C. called Cassius. Sounds like a leaker on the Hill. Top drawer political intelligence, plus stuff about our operations.
Our? You mean CIA? The DDI asked, with sudden concern in his voice.
No matter how old a player you were, no matter how much experience you had, the idea that your parent agency might be compromised scared the living hell out of you.
Correct, Ryan answered.
He didn't need to press that button very hard. Nobody at Langley was entirely comfortable with all the information that went to the select intelligence committees in the House and Senate. Politicians talked for a living, after all. Hell, there were few things harder than making a political figure keep his mouth shut.
Sir, this guy is a fantastically valuable source. We'll get him cut loose from over here in 3 days or so. I think the debriefing process will take months. I've met his wife and daughter. They seem nice enough. The little girl is Sally's age. I think this guy's the real deal, sir. And there's gold in them thar hills.
How comfortable is he?
Well, they're all probably in sensory overload at the moment. I'd think hard about getting a shrink assigned to them to help with the transition. Maybe more than one. We want to keep him settled down. We want him confident in his new life. That might not be easy, but it'll damn sure pay off for us.
We have a couple of guys for that. They know how to talk them through the transition part.
Is the rabbit a flight risk?
Sir, I see nothing to suggest that, but we have to remember that he's made one hell of a broad jump, and the stuff he landed in isn't exactly what he's used to.
Noted. Good call, Jack. What else?
That's all for the moment. We've only been talking to the guy about 5.5 hours, just preliminary stuff so far, but the waters look pretty deep.
Okay. Arthur is on the phone with Basil right now. I'm going to head over that way and give him your read.
Oh, Bob Ritter just got back from Korea. Jet-lagged all to hell and gone. We're going to tell him about your adventure in the field. If he tries to bite your head off, it's our fault. Mine and the judge's.
Ryan took a long look down at the carpet. He didn't quite understand why Ritter disliked him. But they didn't swap Christmas cards, and that was a fact.
Gee, thanks, sir.
Don't sweat it. From what I understand, it sounds like you acquitted yourself pretty well.
Thanks, Admiral. I didn't trip over my own feet. That's all I'm going to claim, if that's okay with you.
Fair enough, my boy. Get your write-up completed and fax it to me PDQ.
In Moscow, the secure fax went into the office of Mike Russell. Oddly, it was a graphic, the first edition cover of Peter Rabbit by Beatrix Potter. The address on the cover sheet told him who was supposed to get it, and on the page was a handwritten message. Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail have moved to a new hutch.
So, Russell thought, they did have a rabbit case, and it had been successfully run. Nothing he could claim to know for certain, but he knew the language spoken in the community. He walked down to Ed Foley's office and knocked on the door.
Come, Foley's voice called.
This just came in from Washington, Ed.
Russell handed the fax across.
Well, that's good news, the COS observed. He folded the signal into his jacket pocket for Mary Pat.
There's an additional message in this fax, Mike, Foley said.
What's that?
Our comms are secure, pal. Otherwise, it would not have come in this way.
Well, thank the good Lord for that, Russell said.
Chapter 30. Flavian Amphitheater.
Ryan? He did? Bob Ritter growled.
Bob, you want to settle down? It's nothing to get your tits in a flutter about, James Greer said, half-soothingly and half an indirect challenge in the CIA's in-house power playground.
Judge Moore looked on in amusement.
Jack went into the field to observe an operation for which we had no available field officer. He didn't step on his crank with the golf shoes, and the defector is in a safe house in the English Midlands right now, and from what I hear, he's singing like a canary.
Well, what's he telling us?
For starters, Judge Moore answered, it seems that our friend Andropov wants to assassinate the Pope.
Ritter's head snapped around.
How solid is that?
It's what made the rabbit decide to take a walk, the DCI said. He's a conscience defector, and that set him off.
Okay, good. What does he know? The DDO asked.
Bob, it seems that this defector, his name is Oleg Ivanovich Zaitsev, by the way, was a senior watch officer in the center's communications, their version of our Mercury.
Shit, Ritter observed an instant later. This is for real?
You know, sometimes a guy puts a quarter in the slot and pulls the handle and he really does get the jackpot, Moore told his subordinate.
Well, damn.
I didn't think you'd object. And the good part, the DCI went on, is that Ivan doesn't know he's gone.
How the hell did we do that?
It was Ed and Mary Pat who twigged to that possibility. Then Judge Moore explained how it had been carried out. They both deserve a nice pat on the head, Bob.
And all while I was out of town, Ritter breathed. Well, I'll be damned.
Yes, there's a bunch of attaboy letters to be drawn up, Greer said next. Including one for Jack.
I suppose, the DDO conceded. He went quiet for a moment, thinking over the possibilities of Operation Beatrix.
Anything good so far?
Aside from the plot against the Pope?
Two code names of penetration agents they have working. Neptune. He sounds like somebody working in the Navy. And Cassius. He's probably on the Hill. More to come, I expect.
I talked to Ryan a few minutes ago. He's pretty excited about this guy. Says his knowledge is encyclopedic. Says there's gold in these hills, to quote the boy.
Ryan does know a thing or two about gold, Moore thought out loud.
Fine. We'll make him our portfolio manager, but he isn't a field officer, Ritter groused.
Bob, he succeeded.
We don't punish people for that, do we? The DCI asked.
This had gone far enough. It was time for Moore to act like the appeals court judge he had been until a couple years before. The voice of God.
Fine, Arthur. You want me to sign the letter of commendation?
Ritter saw the freight train coming, and there was no sense in standing in its way. What the hell, it would just go into the files anyway. CIA commendations almost never saw the light of day. The agency even classified the names of field officers who died heroically 30 years before. It was like a backdoor into heaven, CIA style.
Okay, gentlemen, now that we've settled the administrative issues, what about the plot to kill the Pope? Greer asked, trying to bring order back to the meeting of supposed sober senior executives.
How solid is the information? Ritter wanted to know.
I talked to Basil a few minutes ago. He thinks we need to take it seriously, but I think we need to talk to this rabbit ourselves to quantify the danger to our Polish friend.
Tell the president?
Moore shook his head.
He's tied up all day today with legislative business, and he's flying out to California late this afternoon. Sunday and Monday he'll be giving speeches in Oregon and Colorado. I'll see him Tuesday afternoon about 4:00.
Moore could have asked for an urgent meeting. He could break into the president's schedule on really vital matters, but until they had the chance to speak face-to-face with the rabbit, that was out of the question. The president might even want to speak to the guy himself. He was like that.
What kind of shape is Station Rome in? Greer asked Ritter.
The chief of station is Rick Nolfi. Good guy, but he retires in 3 months. Rome's his sunset posts. He asked for it. His wife, Anne, likes Italy. 6 officers there, mainly working on NATO stuff. 2 pretty experienced, 4 rookies, Ritter reported. But before we get them alerted, we need to think this threat through, and a little presidential guidance won't hurt. The problem is, how the hell do we tell people about this in such a way as not to compromise the source?
Guys, Ritter pointed out, if we went to all the trouble of concealing the defection, it doesn't make much sense to broadcast the information we get from him out to the 4 winds, you know?
That is the problem, Moore was forced to agree.
The Pope doubtless has a protective detail, Ritter went on. But they can't have the same latitude that the Secret Service does, can they? And we don't know how secure they are.
It's the old story, Ryan was saying at the same time in Manchester. If we use the information too freely, we compromise the source and lose all of its utility.
But if we don't use it for fear of compromising it, then we might as well not have the fucking source to begin with.
Jack finished off his wine and poured another glass.
There's a book on this, you know.
What's that?
Double-Edged Secrets. A guy named Jasper Holmes wrote it. He was a U.S. Navy crippy in World War II. Worked signals intelligence in Frupak with Joe Rochefort and his bunch. It's a pretty good book on how the intelligence business works down where the rubber meets the road.
Kingshot made a mental note to look that book up.
Zaitsev was out on the lawn, a very plush one with his wife and daughter at the moment. Mrs. Thompson wanted to take them all shopping. They had to have their private time. Their bedroom suite was thoroughly bugged, of course, complete to a white noise filter in the bathroom, and keeping the wife and kid happy was crucial to the entire operation.
Well, Jack, whatever the opposition has planned, it will take time for them to set it up. The bureaucracies over there are even more moribund than ours, you know.
The KGB too, Al? Ryan wondered.
I think that's the one part of their system that actually works, and Yuri Andropov isn't known for his patience, is he?
Hell, he was their ambassador in Budapest in 1956, remember? The Russians worked pretty decisively back then, didn't they?
That was a serious political threat to their entire system, Kingshot pointed out.
And the Pope isn't? Ryan fired back.
You have me there, the field spook admitted.
Wednesday.
That's what Dan told me.
He's all the way in the open every Wednesday.
Okay, the Pope can appear at that porch he uses to give blessings and stuff, and a halfway good man with a rifle can pop him doing that, but a man with a rifle is too visible to even a casual observer. And a rifle says military to people, and military says government to everybody.
But those probably aren't scheduled very far in advance. At least they're irregular, but every damned Wednesday afternoon he hops in his jeep and parades around the Piazza San Pietro, right in the middle of the assembled multitude, Al. And that's pistol range.
Ryan sat back in his chair and took another sip of the French white.
I am not sure I'd want to fire a pistol at that close a range.
Al, once upon a time they got a guy to do Leon Trotsky with an ice axe.
Engagement range, maybe 2 feet, Ryan reminded him.
Sure, different situation now. But since when have the Russians been reticent about risking their troops?
And this will be that Bulgarian bastard, remember?
Your guy called him an expert killer.
It's amazing what a real expert can do.
I saw a gunnery sergeant at Quantico. That guy could write his name with a 45 at 50 feet. I watched him do it once.
Ryan had never really mastered the big Colt automatic, but that gunny sure as hell had.
You're probably being overly concerned.
Maybe, Jack admitted.
But I'd feel a hell of a lot better if His Holiness wore a Kevlar jacket under his vestments.
He wouldn't, of course. People like that didn't scare the way civilians did. It wasn't the sense of invincibility that some professional soldiers had. It was just that, to them, death wasn't something to be afraid of.
Any really observant Catholic was supposed to feel that way, but Jack wasn't one of those.
Not quite.
As a practical matter, what can one do?
Look for one face in a crowd? And who's to say it's the right face? Kingshot asked. Who's to say Strokov hasn't hired someone else to do the actual shooting?
Well, I can see myself shooting someone, but not in a crowd.
So, you use a suppressed weapon, a big can-type silencer. Cut down the noise, and you remove a lot of the danger of being identified. All the eyes are going to be on the target, remember, not looking sideways into the crowd.
True, Al conceded.
You know, it's too damned easy to find reasons to do nothing. Didn't Dr. Johnson say that doing nothing is in every man's power? Ryan asked forlornly.
That's what we're doing, Al.
Finding reasons not to do anything.
Can we let the guy die? Can we just sit here and drink our wine and let the Russians kill the man?
No, Jack, but we cannot go off like a loose hand grenade either. Field operations have to be planned. You need professionals to think things through in a professional way. There are many things professionals can do, but first, they have to have orders to do them. But that was being decided elsewhere.
Prime Minister, we have reason to believe that the KGB has an operation underway to assassinate the Pope of Rome, C reported. He'd come over on short notice, interrupting her afternoon political business.
Really? She asked Sir Basil in dry reply.
She was used to hearing the strangest of things from her intelligence chief, and had cultivated the habit of not responding too violently to them.
What is the source for that information?
I told you several days ago about Operation Beatrix. Well, we and the Americans have got him out successfully. We even managed to do it in such a way that the Sobes think him dead. The defector is in a safe house outside Manchester right now, C told his chief of government.
Have we told the Americans?
Basil nodded. Yes, Prime Minister. He is their fox, after all. We'll let him fly to America next week, but I discussed the case briefly earlier today with Judge Arthur Moore, their Director of Central Intelligence. I expect he'll brief the President in early next week.
What action do you suppose they will take? She asked next.
Difficult to say, ma'am. It's a rather dicey proposition, actually. The defector, his name is Oleg, is a most important asset, and we must work very hard to protect his identity, and also knowledge of the fact that he is now on our side of the curtain. Exactly how we might warn the Vatican of the potential danger is a complex issue, to say the least.
This is a real operation the Soviets have underway, the PM asked again.
It was rather a lot to swallow, even for them, who she believed capable of almost anything.
It appears so, yes, Sir Basil confirmed. But we do not know the priority, and of course, we know nothing of the schedule.
I see. The Prime Minister fell quiet for a moment.
Our relations with the Vatican are cordial, but not especially close.
That fact went all the way back to Henry VIII, though the Roman Catholic Church had gradually come to letting bygones be bygones over the intervening centuries.
Regrettably, that is so, C agreed.
I see, she said again, and thought some more before speaking again. When she leaned forward, she spoke with dignity and force.
Sir Basil, it is not the policy of Her Majesty's government to stand idly by while a friendly chief of state is murdered by our adversaries. You are directed to look into any possible action that might forestall this eventuality.
Some people shot from the hip, Sir Basil thought. Others shot from the heart. For all her outward toughness, the United Kingdom's chief of government was one of the latter.
Yes, Prime Minister.
The problem was that she didn't say how the hell he was supposed to do this. Well, he'd coordinate with Arthur at Langley. But for right now, he had a mission that would be difficult at best.
What exactly was he supposed to do? Deploy a squadron of the Special Air Service to St. Peter's Square?
But you didn't say no to this, Prime Minister. At least not in a 10 Downing Street conference room.
Anything else this defector has told us?
Yes, ma'am. He has identified by code name a Soviet penetration agent, probably in Whitehall. The code name is Minister. When we get more information about the man in question, we'll have the security service root about after him.
What does he give them?
Political and diplomatic intelligence, ma'am.
Oleg tells us that it is high-level material, but he has not as yet given us information that would directly identify him.
Interesting.
It was not a new story. This one could be one of the Cambridge group that had been so valuable to the USSR back in the war years,
and then all the way into the 1960s, or perhaps a person recruited by them. Charleston had been instrumental in purging them out of SIS, but Whitehall wasn't quite his patch.
Do keep me posted on that.
A casual order from her had the force of a granite slab hand-delivered from Mount Sinai.
Of course, Prime Minister.
Would it be helpful if I spoke to the American President on this matter with the Pope?
Better to let CIA brief him first, I think. It wouldn't do to short-circuit their system. This defector was, after all, mainly an American operation, and it's Arthur's place to speak to him first.
Yes, I suppose so. But when I do talk to him, I want him to know that we are taking it with the utmost seriousness, and that we expect him to take some substantive action.
Prime Minister, I should think he will not take it lying down, as it were.
I agree. He's such a good chap.
The full story on America's covert support for the Falkland Islands war would not see the light of day for many years. America had to keep her fences with South America well mended, after all. But neither was the PM one to forget such assistance, covert or not.
This Beatrix operation, it was well executed, she asked C.
Flawlessly, ma'am, Charleston assured her. Our people did everything exactly by the book.
I trust you will look after those who carried it out.
Most certainly, ma'am, C assured her.
Good. Thank you for coming over, Sir Basil.
A pleasure as always, Prime Minister.
Charleston stood, thinking that that Ryan fellow would have called her his sort of broad. As indeed she was. But all the way back to Century House, he was worried about the operation he now had to get underway. What exactly would he be doing about it? Figuring such things out, of course, was why he was so lavishly paid.
"Hi, honey," Ryan said.
"Where are you?" Kathy asked at once.
"I can't say exactly, but I'm back in England. The thing I had to do on the continent, well, it developed into something I have to look after here."
"Can you come home and see us?"
"Afraid not." One major problem was that although his Chatham home was actually within driving distance, he wasn't confident enough yet to drive that far without crunching himself on a side road. "Everybody okay?"
"We're fine, except that you aren't here," Kathy responded, with an edge of anger, disappointment in her voice.
One thing she was sure of. Wherever Jack had been, it sure as hell hadn't been Germany. But she couldn't say that over the phone. She understood the intelligence business that much.
"I'm sorry, babe. I can tell you that what I'm doing is pretty important. But that's all."
"I'm sure," she conceded. And she understood that Jack wanted to be home with his family. He wasn't one to skip town for the fun of it.
"How's work?"
"I did glasses all day. Got some surgery tomorrow morning, though.
Wait a minute. Here's Sally."
"Hi, Daddy,"
a new and small voice said.
"Hi, Sally. How are you?"
"Fine,"
what kids always said.
"What did you do today?"
"Miss Margaret and I colored."
"Anything good?"
"Yeah, cows and horses," she reported with
considerable enthusiasm. Sally especially liked pelicans and cows.
"Well, I need to talk to Mommy."
"Okay."
And Sally would think of this as a deep and weighty conversation as she went back to the Wizard of Oz tape in the living room.
"And how's the little guy?" Jack asked his wife.
"Chewing on his hands, mostly. He's in the playpen right now, watching the TV."
"He's easier than Sally was at that age," Jack observed with a smile.
"He's not colicky, thank God," Mrs. Dr. Ryan agreed.
"I miss you," Jack said, rather forlornly. It was true. He did miss her.
"I miss you, too."
"Gotta get back to work," he said next.
"When will you be home?"
"Couple of days, I think."
"Okay."
She had to surrender to that unhappy fact.
Call me.
Will do, babe.
Bye.
See you soon.
Love you. I love you too.
Bye.
Bye, Jack.
Ryan put the phone back in the cradle and told himself that he wasn't designed for this kind of life. Like his father before him, he wanted to sleep in the same bed as his wife. Had his father ever slept away from home? Jack wondered. He couldn't remember such a night. But Jack had chosen a line of work in which that was not always possible. It was supposed to have been. He was an analyst who worked at a desk and slept at home, but somehow it wasn't working out that way, goddammit. Dinner was beef Wellington with Yorkshire pudding. Mrs. Thompson could have been head chef at a good restaurant. Jack didn't know where the beef came from, but it seemed more succulent than the usual grass-fed British sort. Either she got the meat in a special place, they still had specialty butcher shops over here, or she really knew how to tenderize it, and the Yorkshire pudding was positively ethereal. Toss in the French wine, and this dinner was just plain brilliant. An adjective popular in the UK. The Russians attacked the food rather as Georgi Zhukov had attacked Berlin with considerable gusto.
Oleg Ivanich, I have to tell you, Ryan admitted in a fit of honesty, the food in America is not always of this quality.
He'd timed this from Mrs. Thompson's appearance at the dining room door. Jack turned to her. Ma'am, if you ever need a recommendation as a chef, you just call me, okay? Emma had a very friendly smile.
Thank you, Sir John.
Seriously, ma'am, this is wonderful.
You're very kind.
Jack wondered if she'd like his steaks on the grill and Kathy's spinach salad. The key was getting good corn-gorged Iowa beef, which wasn't easy here, though he could try the Air Force commissary at Greenham Commons. It took nearly an hour to finish dinner, and the after-dinner drinks were excellent. They even served Starka vodka in a gesture of additional hospitality to their Russian guests. Oleg, Jack saw, really gunned it down.
Even the Politburo does not eat so well, the rabbit observed as dinner broke up.
Well, we raise good beef in Scotland. This was Aberdeen Angus, Nick Thompson advised as he collected the plates.
Fed on corn? Ryan asked.
They didn't have that much corn over here, did they?
I do not know. The Japanese feed beer to their Kobe beef, the former cop observed. Perhaps they do that up in Scotland.
That would explain the quality, Jack replied with a chuckle. Oleg Ivanich, you must learn about British beer. It's the best in the world.
Not American? The Russian asked.
Ryan shook his head. Nope. That's one of the things they do better than us.
Truly?
Truly, King Shot confirmed. But the Irish are quite good as well.
I do love my Guinness, though it's better in Dublin than in London.
Why waste the good stuff on you guys? Jack asked.
Once a bloody Irishman, always a bloody Irishman, King Shot observed.
So, Oleg, Ryan asked, lighting up an after-dinner smoke, is there anything different we ought to be doing? To make you comfortable, I mean.
I have no complaints, but I expect CIA will not give me so fine a house as this one.
Oleg, I am a millionaire and don't live in a house this nice, Ryan confirmed with a laugh. But your home in America will be more comfortable than your apartment in Moscow.
Will I get car?
Sure.
Wait how long? Zaitsev asked.
Wait for what? To buy a car? Zaitsev nodded. Oleg, you can pick from any of hundreds of car dealerships. Pick the car you like, pay for it, and drive it home.
We usually let our wives pick the color, Jack added.
The rabbit was incredulous.
So easy?
Yep. I used to drive a Volkswagen Rabbit, but I kinda like the Jaguar now. I might get one when I get home.
Nice engine.
Kathy likes it, but she might go back to a Porsche. She's been driving them since she was a teenager. Of course, it's not real practical with two kids, Ryan added, hopefully. He didn't like the German two-seater that much. Mercedes seemed to him a much safer design.
And buy house, also easy?
Depends. If you buy a new house, yes, it's pretty easy. To buy a house that somebody already owns, first you have to meet the owner and make an offer. But the agency will probably help you with that.
Where will we live?
Anywhere you want. After we pick your brain clean, Ryan didn't add. There's a saying in America. It's a free country. It's also a big country. You can find a place you like and move there. A lot of defectors live in the Washington area. I don't know why. I don't much like it. The summers can be miserable.
Beastly hot, Kingshot agreed, and the humidity is awful.
You think it's bad there, try Florida, Jack suggested. But a lot of people love it down there.
And travel from one part to another? No papers? Zaitsev asked.
For a KGB puke, this guy doesn't know shit, Jack thought.
No papers, Ryan assured him.
We'll get you an American Express card to make that easy. Then he had to explain credit cards to the rabbit. It took 10 minutes. It was so alien a concept to a Soviet citizen. By the end, Zaitsev's head was visibly swimming.
You do have to pay the bill at the end of the month, Kingshot warned him. Some people forget that, and they can get into serious financial trouble as a result.
C was in his Belgravia townhouse, sipping some Louis XIII brandy and chatting with a friend. Sir George Hendley was a colleague of 30 years standing. By profession a solicitor, he'd worked closely with the British government for most of his life, often consulting quietly with the Security Service and the Foreign Office. He had a most secret clearance, plus one into compartmented information. He had been a confidant of several prime ministers over the years and was considered as reliable as the Queen herself. He thought it just came along with a Winchester school tie.
The Pope, eh?
Yes, George, Charleston confirmed. The PM wants us to look into protecting the man. Trouble is, I haven't a clue at the moment. We can't contact the Vatican directly about it.
Quite so, Basil. One can trust their loyalty, but not their politics. Tell me, how good do you suppose their own intelligence service is?
I'd have to say it's top drawer in many areas. What better confidant than a priest, after all, and what better way to transfer information than inside the confessional? Plus all the other techniques that one can use. Their political intelligence is probably as good as ours. Perhaps even better. I would imagine they know everything that happens in Poland, for example. And Eastern Europe probably has few secrets from them as well. One cannot underestimate their ability to call on a man's highest loyalty, after all. We've kept an ear on their communications for decades.
Is that so? Hendley asked.
Oh, yes. During World War II, they were very valuable to us. There was a German cardinal in the Vatican back then, a chap named Mansdorf.
Odd, isn't it? Sounds like a Jewish name.
First name Dieter, Archbishop of Mannheim, then promoted to the Vatican Diplomatic Service. Traveled a lot. Kept us posted on the inner secrets of the Nazi Party from 1938 through to the end of the war. He didn't much care for Hitler, you see.
And their communications?
Mansdorf actually gave us his own cipher book to copy. They changed it after the war, of course, and so we got little more in the way of their private mail later on. But they never changed their cipher system, and the chaps at GCHQ have occasional success listening in.
Good man, Dieter Cardinal Mansdorf.
Never got recognized for his service, of course. Died in 59, I think.
So how do we know that the Romans don't know about this operation already?
Not a bad question, Charleston thought, but he'd long since considered that one. It is being held very closely, our defector tells us. Hand-delivered messages, not going out on their machine ciphers, that sort of thing. And a bare handful of people involved. The one important name we do know is a Bulgarian field officer, Boris Strokov, colonel in the DS. We suspect he's the chap who killed Georgi Markov just up the road from my office. Which Charleston considered an act of lèse majesté, perhaps even executed as a direct challenge to the Secret Intelligence Service. CIA and KGB had an informal covenant. Neither service ever killed in the other's capital. SIS had no such agreement with anyone, a fact that might have cost Georgi Markov his life.
So you think he might be the prospective assassin?
C waved his hands.
It's all we have, George.
Not much, Hendley observed.
Too thin for comfort, but it's better than nothing.
We have numerous photos of this Strokov fellow. The Yard was close to arresting him when he flew out of Heathrow. For Paris, actually, and from there on to Sofia.
Perhaps he was in a hurry to leave, Hendley suggested.
He's a professional, George. How many chances do such people take? In retrospect, it's rather amazing that the Yard got a line on him at all.
So you think he might be in Italy?
A statement, not a question.
It's a possibility, but whom can we tell? C asked.
The Italians have criminal jurisdiction to a point. The Lateran Treaty gives them discretionary jurisdiction, subject to a Vatican veto, Charleston explained. He'd had to look into the legalities of the situation. The Vatican has its own security service. The Swiss Guards, you know. But however good the men are, it's necessarily a thin reed, what with the restrictions imposed on them from above. And the Italian authorities cannot flood the area with their own security forces for obvious reasons.
So, the PM has saddled you with an impossible task.
Yes, again, George, Sir Basil had to agree.
So, what can you do?
All I can really come up with is to put some officers in the crowd and look for this Markov fellow.
And if they see him?
Ask him politely to depart the area? Basil wondered aloud.
It would work, probably.
He is a professional, and being spotted, I suppose we'd ostentatiously take photographs of him, would give him serious pause, perhaps enough to abandon the mission.
Thin, Hendley thought of that idea.
Yes, it is, C had to agree. But it would at least give him something to tell the Prime Minister.
Whom to send?
We have a good station chief in Rome, Tom Sharp. He has four officers in his shop. Plus, we could send a few more from Century House, I suppose.
Sounds reasonable, Basil. Why did you call me over?
I was hoping you'd have an idea that's eluded me, George. A final sip from the snifter. As much as he felt like some more brandy for the night, he demurred.
One can only do what one can, Hendley sympathized.
He's too good a man to be cut down this way, at the hands of the bloody Russians. And for what? For standing up for his own people. That sort of loyalty is supposed to be rewarded, not murdered in public.
And the PM feels the same way.
She is comfortable taking a stand, for which the PM was famous throughout the world.
The Americans? Hendley asked.
Charleston shrugged. They haven't had a chance to speak to the defector yet. They trust us, George, but not that much.
Well, do what you can. This KGB operation probably will not happen in the immediate future anyway. How efficient are the Soviets anyway?
We shall see, was all C had to say. It was quieter here than in his own house,
despite the nearby presence of the motorway, Ryan thought, rolling out of bed at 6:50. The sink continued the eccentric British way of having two faucets, one hot and one cold, making sure that your left hand boiled while the right one froze when you washed your hands. As usual, it felt good to shave and brush and otherwise get yourself ready for the day, even if you had to start it with Taster's Choice. Kingshot was already in the kitchen when Jack got there. Funny how people slept late on Sunday, but frequently not on Saturday. Message from London, Al said by way of greeting. What's that? A question. How would you feel about a flight to Rome this afternoon? What's up? Sir Basil is sending some people to the Vatican to suss things out. He wants to know if you want to go. It's a CIA op, after all. Tell him yes, Jack said, without a moment's thought. When? Then he realized he was being impetuous again. Damn. Noon flight out of Heathrow. You ought to have time to go home and change clothes. Car? Nick will drive you over, Kingshot told him. What are you going to tell Oleg? The truth. It ought to make him feel more important, Al thought aloud. It was always a good thing for defectors. Ryan and Thompson left within the hour, with Jack's bags in the boot. This Zaitsev chap, Nick said out on the motorway. He seems rather an important defector. Bet your ass, Nick. He's got all kinds of hot information between his ears. We're going to treat him like a hod full of gold bricks. Good of CIA to let us talk to him. It'd be kind of churlish not to. You guys got him out for us, and covering the defection up was pretty slick. Jack couldn't say too much more.